of another age, of another age.
Welcome to Radio Free Canada. Welcome back after 1 week. I'm your host, Kevin Annett, with my co-host, Ryan Gable. We're here every Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, bbsradio.com network. And we're also archived, of course, at our website, kanatarepublic.ca. This is the official voice of the burgeoning Republic of Kanata. And we are actually honored to have a number of other voices with us today, two of them being George Carlin, who you'll hear at the break, an amazing comedian who became more and more political and aware the older he got, kind of like my father, and hopefully me, and also Irene Fable. Now, George is going to read a little thing from one of his skits called Religion is Bullshit, which I thought was appropriate considering our show, but also Irene Fable is a survivor, was a survivor of an example of how religion murdered a little baby at a Catholic residential school in Saskatchewan. So we're going to hear their voices as well. And I want to also thank everybody who's been writing in with program ideas, and especially the new listeners who are tuning in today from England and America, who have been very inspired by our discussion of people's assemblies and are fashioning the same thing in their countries, recognizing, like in Canada, that the people in power in the institutions are criminal bodies and have lost their right to govern. So it's now up to we the people to establish that according to a genuine republic based on common law. All of it's strictly lawful and, in fact, more legal than what we're operating under. But we can tend to get into some of that today. Ryan, welcome back.
Hey, Kevin. Always great to be here. I think that those are some really good topics to get into today. You know, playing off of what we talked about last week, I think one of the biggest things to realize is that the system that we're operating within and that people think by going out and protesting and writing letters and trying to work within the system is going to bring some type of justice, but it's the system that's corrupt. And that's why the common law courts and the people's assemblies are so important to establish our own form of government.
Right. And now we did post something this week. It's the latest posting at the Tribunal website, itccs.org. It's called The Nature and Purpose of Our Struggle. And we're going to talk a little bit about that in the second half because it involves going a bit deeper beneath the obvious into what really causes social change and the examples of how here in Canada we have actually, in Kanata, a small number of us actually forced change out of the governments and churches that did not want to acknowledge anything about their crimes of genocide. So we're going to go into detail of how that works. If you want to do the background reading in that, please read through that posting after, itccs.org. And prior to that, I also want to share, and we can maybe start off with this, Ryan. This last week, I received some very interesting information from England. Now, we have a research team working there in London, England, and they're getting into the archives of a number of missionary societies that set up these so-called Indian residential schools, both in America and Canada. One of them, it's called the New England Company. They were set up in the 1600s. They're the oldest missionary society out of England, and they were the ones who set up the notorious, what's called the Mush Hole, the Anglican Church-run Mohawk residential school in Brantford, Ontario, where we did, and a forensic team actually did an archaeological survey and found bones and buttons from children who had died there. Now, what's very interesting, and I want to throw this out and we can talk about it, is according to these, the things that the people in London have been coming up with right in the New England Company archives, is it was very clear that there was a very strong Jesuit presence in these Anglican residential schools. And to give a little bit of a background, there was a woman, a Mohawk woman named Leona Moses, who spoke to us in the course of the dig we did at the end of 2011 and early 2012. Mohawk woman Cheryl Squire and I visited Leona Moses in her home. According to Leona, she had been a researcher for the Anglican Church. She had gotten into their secret archives and had discovered documents where it was called the G12 collection, which is presently being sat on by the Anglican Church. They won't let anyone into these secret archives, even though under the law they have to. Disclose anything to do with crime. In this G12 collection, there was a document referring to a plan to exterminate all of the Mohawks using the Mohawk school and by wiping out the next generation. Now, when they dug deeper into these references, Leona Moses saw that there was a very strong involvement of the Catholic Church in cultic rituals that went on at the school. Now, this is striking very close to home because we know from eyewitnesses in Europe, the Ninth Circle cult has been operating for several hundred years, a child sacrificial cult involving both the Anglican and Catholic churches in Europe, and apparently over on this side of the water as well. Now, what's really disturbing is after Leona met with us, Bishop Bob Bennett, the Anglican bishop in London, Ontario, came and visited her and told her that she couldn't speak to anybody anymore about this stuff. And a few years later, Leona Moses' house burned down, where some of this evidence had apparently been stored. And very soon after that, she dies, according to the coroner's report, quote, unexpectedly. Now, here's the thing, and I want to throw this out and we can talk about it. Leona Moses died on May 31st, 2014. 6 days before that, our second common law court case had begun against Jorge Bergoglio, Justin Welby, and Adolfo Pichon, the head of the Jesuits. Adolfo Pichon steps down as head of the Jesuits. He announced his resignation on May 25th, 6 days before Leona dies. And that is not a coincidence because the reason he had stepped down is over the previous month, we had made public solid evidence that the Jesuits had been involved in this Ninth Circle. Very soon after that, Leona dies when she had uncovered apparent links between this Ninth Circle and the Jesuits and what was going on in the mush hole. So this is more than coincidental. It's adding to the, you know, this jigsaw puzzle we're putting together showing how these cultic killings of children in the past at the residential schools were not confined to Canada and they're carrying on today. So let me just ask for your comments and thoughts about any of that, Ryan.
Yeah, a couple of things come to mind. First of all, if anybody hasn't seen, you have some of the video of that dig at the mush hole in Brantford up on YouTube, and you can find it at itccs.org. The second thing that comes to mind is I'm a big history buff, and I'm a huge fan of being able to research what many people call secret societies, which are really just societies that operate in secret. It doesn't mean that just because you're a member of one of these groups that you're somehow worshiping the devil or you have some sinister alliance with some anti-humane agenda. But the Jesuits, known as the Society of Jesus, I find them very interesting for a lot of different reasons. Of course, you can read many books about their traditional origins, but I'm a big fan of symbols. So when I look at the symbol of the Jesuit order, it's actually a sun disk and a type of Maltese cross that is in the center of it. It has the initials of Jesus, the original initials of Jesus in Greek, IHS, Jesus. And if you take that symbol and look in America, the Knights of the Golden Circle or the KKK actually use that same logo. And the reason that they dress in the white robes and the red crosses also ties in with the Knights Templar, and this ties in with the bloodline of Christ. So when you look at a group like the KKK, so much racial hatred, especially for blacks, that's been a social engineering agenda, part of this eugenics genocide movement against minority groups. And that, I think, also ties in, Kevin, with the native cultures, whether it's Manifest Destiny or the other forms of Manifest Destiny issued by the King of Spain or by the Vatican for the crimes that were committed by some of the earlier explorers, eradicating the native population in the name of God.
And it gets even, exactly, Ryan, and it gets even more obvious when you look at the papal bulls authorizing the conquest of indigenous people around the world.
Absolutely.
Any non-Catholic could be conquered and legally enslaved or killed by any, quote, Catholic king. And as a matter of fact, in early documents of this one papal bull, Inter Caetera, there was papal commentary on it, and it classified the native people or the, quote, savages of the New World in the same category as a Protestant, a humanist, or any kind of, quote, heretic. So they were using the same laws of inquisition against the natives here on Turtle Island as they were back home on, you know, some of my ancestors and others who were dissenting from the Catholic Church.
That's right. And as a matter of fact, I just wrote a piece. I could probably put it together and get it to you. Maybe we could send it out to listeners for my new book, talking about the origins of the Inquisition. And one of the first mass genocidal events that happened during the Inquisition was when the Catholic Church basically sent an army to southwest France, and they executed the Cathars. Right. And the Cathars had an immense knowledge. They actually had a lot of rumors before the Knights Templar actually fled to southwest France to a place called Lungsac. And the Cathars had this idea that Mary Magdalene was the wife of Jesus, and that there was this bloodline, and that it continued on through like a royal dynasty. And because that information obviously contradicted the beliefs and the teachings of the church, they sent a massive army to execute the Cathars and eradicated most of them. And what's funny, Kevin, is that the Cathars were actually a they were a very peaceful, kind of like the Celtic Druids, the priest class of the of the Celts, where they would wear they'd wear black robes and they would wear different other colors that represented nature. They'd go out in nature, they'd perform sacrifices and rituals, but not dark and sinister and not to the devil. The opposite and the reverse of that, the what some people might call the archontic inversion from the Gnostic Gospels, the archons who created this fake false reality, is that the origins of the church are based on those cultic practices, occult just meaning unknown or hidden to the mass majority. So when the church takes these rituals and instead of, you know, sacrificing for the betterment of man or for the betterment of nature to worship nature, they do the exact opposite. And the best example I can give you of that is true Satanists who truly worship the devil. The reason that they sacrifice children in particular is because a child, when a child is born to the average person, is seen as a great miracle, a gift from God. And when the Satanists sacrifice a child, they see that as one of the best ways that they can kind of stick it in the face of God, is by sacrificing that miracle. So that's why a lot of the well, that's why a lot of these sacrifices take place. But the base point is, and I'll digress, is that the church, when they perform these rituals, they're performing an inverted fashion of the rituals for which their organization was based on in the first place. So they basically stole the identity of some of these groups and inverted it to make those groups look like they're the Satanists, and then to make the church look like they're the saviors.
Right. And now to bring this back to the whole thing of genocide in Canada and our movement, the Ninth Circle is named after the reference in Dante's Inferno to the ninth level and lowest level of hell, which is reserved for people who betray a trust. And the most simple basic trust is that of a child towards a parent. And so the whole massive child trafficking, child murder, child rape network that's institutionalized in the Catholic Church, in which no pope is changing, is based on that what you're describing, that basically transfer of energy. And it kind of gets into what we're going to talk about in the second part, about the nature of change and how it's a result of energy flow, not things that we necessarily see in the material world. And, you know, I want to talk about that, but I also kind of, in reference to what you were saying, this is very important. Remember how a few minutes ago I mentioned how Leona Moses had discovered this reference to the genocidal aim of the Mushhole, and she died the same week that the head of the Jesuits announced his resignation after we had named their crimes publicly. Now, I want to show you there's a real parallel about what was going on. Two eyewitnesses in Belgium have described these cultic rituals of child killing and human hunting parties in Belgium as recently as 2009. That was Anne-Marie van Billenberg and Toos Nienhaus. Also, two other witnesses who remained anonymous confirming that Pashon, the present Pope Jorge Bergoglio, and others were seen at these rituals. Now, here's a parallel. There's 8 points on which what Leona Moses was saying and these two witnesses in Europe were saying coincide. According to Leona Moses and a woman named Yvonne Fanton, who came out, she's a police-accredited parapsychologist who we brought to the Mushhole. And Yvonne Fanton gave a whole list of things that she observed. She couldn't touch the building for very long. I was there when she did it. She was getting so many horrible images, she couldn't even go near the building. But she and these two independent witnesses in Europe all described these following 8 things that all happened at the rituals that they were observing, either parapsychologically or in the flesh, as in Europe. First of all, the participants all wore red robes and skull caps. Secondly, they were in a ceremony gathered in a semicircle in a sub-basement vault. Thirdly, there were children being sacrificed with the use of crosses, and it was being done in as cruel and sadistic a way as possible. Fourth, there were outsiders present, usually dignitaries or very powerful politicians or other people. Fifth, the blood drained from the children was put into cups and then either drunk or bathed in. Sixth, both Anglican and Catholic clergy were present. 7, there were penis trophies taken. That is, the males had their penises cut off as trophies. And 8, German was being spoken. Now, those 8 things all occurred, according to Yvonne, at the mush hole in the sub-basement area as far back as the 19th century. She said it went back that far. And the same 8 things occurred as recently as 2009 in the fields of outside Brussels and in special safe houses provided by the criminal syndicate Drangheta in Belgium and Holland. Now, that coincidence, they're describing the same thing, and that we know is the Ninth Circle rituals happening under the direct auspices of the Church of England and the Church of Rome.
That's right. Now, you mentioned Brussels. I know they're in, I think it's near Brussels. It's near the NATO headquarters. There's something called the Castle of Darkness is the name that most people know of it. And one of the prominent members that supposedly goes to the Castle of Darkness is actually Father George Bush, the former president of the United States, who himself is a member of the Skull and Bone Society, which is a Germanic society which spawned out of Germany from the Taft family, another presidential family. And they are highly involved with the Catholic Church, with the P2 Lodge of Freemasonry, and obviously with the Vatican Bank. So when you see that kind of a connection, Kevin, it shows you how well that this network is connected, whether it's in Rome or Canada or the United States. And of course, the intelligence networks, which a lot of them, you know, for example, I was actually just talking to Freeway Ricky Ross today, the real Rick Ross, who was a huge drug dealer for the CIA and who was involved in the Iran-Contra scandal with the Reagan administration. And, you see that the Central Intelligence Agency basically would sell drugs and bring drugs into the country specifically because they couldn't get funding for their black operations from the government. So that's how they would make money. Now, they also do that because obviously you can make a lot of money doing the illegal drug trade, but the selling and the trafficking of children is another multi-billion-dollar industry. And just on that merit alone, that's one of the reasons that these agencies and these intelligence organizations are involved in the trafficking and the networks of child trafficking, because they're able to use the vehicles that are promoted, whether it's for example, the church or the Child Protective Services is seen as just that. Child protective services. They protect children. The church is seen as this safe haven for families and for people that want to come to God and they want salvation. So they're able to infiltrate those agencies, take advantage of the people who really don't know what's going on, and then they're able to use those networks to funnel into their own networks, whether it's for drugs or for child trafficking. And I find it really interesting, Kevin, you mentioned one time to me the company called Cargill. Remember that? And I think it's in the southwest of the U.S.
It's the largest. It's based in Minneapolis. It's the largest food producer in America and one of the largest in the world. And it's tied into the satanic child network, definitely.
Exactly. So let me bring this around full circle, if I may. Cargill was sued, I think it was by the International Labor Rights Union. Cargill was sued along with Nestle and Archer Midland, I think is the other company that was sued. And they were sued and they were actually taken to court for the theft, the trafficking, the torture, and the molestation of high-level officials in these groups of children from Mali, Africa. Now, that was something that happened in very recent times, and this is a major, major corporation. They have the biggest revenue stream in the United States amongst all other corporations. Now, I also heard that, and I know this might go very far for some people, that at one point they were taking the remains of some of these children from some of these networks, and they were using them in rituals and then taking the remains and putting them into the food supply. And I thought for a while, that's kind of far-fetched. Well, to bring it around full circle, Kevin, in the last couple of months, you know, we've seen a company called Pepsi, which has come out and announced that no longer are they going to put human diploid cells into their beverages. And you think, no longer going to. They've been putting, you know, fetal cells in their beverages. And it turns out that companies like Kraft, companies like Pepsi, have been putting aborted fetal tissue and cells into their beverages. And of course, this was really confirmed not just from the fact that they came out and reversed their support for that, but because of the Planned Parenthood issues that came out and the selling of aborted tissue. So my point is, when you have this put into the food supply and into the beverages, it's like making everybody unknowingly perform these rituals, which are an inversion of the gift of life.
And that reversion of the gift of life is a worshiping of those negative forces. And we all kind of play into this. We all kind of play into this energetic expression by participating in this knowingly or unknowingly. And I'll leave it at that. I think that just brings us around to this energetic connection. We have to wake up and understand what's going on to make a change.
Well, and also at a simple biological level, you know, you are what you eat. And if you're bringing in hormones and the energy attached to those cells that were slaughtered, just like in a cow in a slaughterhouse, you are taking on the same anxiety and kind of spiritual dumbing down of the slaughtered individual. And so, I mean, it's all tied back to population control and traumatizing people. I before the break, in the next 5 minutes or so, I did want to relate everything we're saying back again to what we're talking about within Canada, where in the Anglican, Catholic, and United churches, as criminal bodies, are being convicted on the basis of this kind of solid evidence that the crimes against children in the Indian residential schools did not end in 1996 when the last one closed. It carries on today. We've got a lot of examples of that in the West Coast child trafficking, of the frantic efforts by the churches to attack anyone who begins to look into this stuff. And, you know, this long history of what they've tried to do to me is, you know, we could spend hours on. But the point is that their efforts are not stopping because they're concealing crimes of the present. So, you know, this is what we have to say to people. You put money in those collection plates, you're colluding with a criminal body, you're subject to arrest. And it's amazing how people don't get that through their head, their complicity, you know.
Right, their complexity or complicity just simply by participating, whether it's knowingly or unknowingly.
Right, and one thing as well, before we go into the break, I wanted to mention, there's another link here with the Pope Francis, Jorge Bergoglio, coming to America in September. And one of the reasons the Anglican Catholic churches are kind of ramping up the efforts to hide all of this stuff right now is because of the fact that Bergoglio is going to be here. And not surprisingly, he's speaking to U.S. Congress over the period September 23rd and 24th, which again has great cultic significance. Those 2 days of the month are often sacrificial high points. But related to him and who he's protecting in the Vatican is Joseph Ratzinger, who was convicted under common law by our first court case in Brussels. He was a member of what's called the Knights of Darkness, which is a similar sacrificial network that operated within the SS during World War II. The Knights of Darkness still operates, and it has a list of participants, you know, a mile wide. You know, one of the shows will bring out some of those people, who they are, but they're tied into things like the Rotary Club, which still operates child labor operations in Thailand. The Rotary Club, through the Catholic Church, actually runs what's really the equivalent of residential schools in the highlands of northern highlands of Thailand. And, you know, so this is an example of how these networks are continuing to the present.
They do continue to the present, and I think that's an important thing to flag that we do almost every week, actually, is because when you had the admittance a couple of months ago, even in the New York Times, the TRC, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which basically admitted that there was a form of genocide committed in Canada by the United Anglican and Catholic Churches at the residential schools. Now, the reason that amongst all the evidence that you've produced and that I've talked about before on my radio show and that others have discussed and maybe written books about, even though there's very few, amidst all that evidence to show that there were thousands and thousands of children that went missing and that were killed and experimented on in these residential schools run by the church and allowed to run by the state, is that they come out and they admit it after so much time has passed, but they whitewash the story so that official history shows that, yes, they did some stuff that was wrong. It was basically negligence. And this is a number they gave us of what just a couple of thousand kids over all the years died. So they whitewash it and they're able to make it look like, yes, right, the crime was committed, but it really wasn't as bad as it seemed. Now, if it wasn't taking place today, there would be not much more of an incentive to just admit amongst all the evidence,
right,
that these crimes took place in a much more grotesque manner. But since it goes on today, they have to divert people's attention by at least admitting it and then by trying to cover it up at the same time so the crimes today can still be committed under that guise.
Well, and exactly, and it gets even more insidious in that they didn't simply whitewash the issue. They legally indemnified themselves so that years before any of the stuff was allowed to come out in the corporate media, the churches and governments sat down together in around 2002 and made an agreement whereby money would be given to some survivors and a restricted apology, they called it, would be issued in return for the fact that nobody would ever be prosecuted for it. So the criminals got together and said, we're not going to ever go to court over this. And in return, we're going to get the witnesses to get some money and then sign off so that they can't sue us. That is a criminal act right there. That's obstructing justice. And yet they've been allowed to get away with it. And the whole country has applauded their efforts. Oh, look, they're admitting stuff. But in fact, nobody has ever been brought to trial for the death of 50,000 children. And we keep saying that over and over. But the fact is that people are now living under a criminal regime in Canada. And if that's ever going to change, we need what we're going to lead to in the second half, which is a different lawful jurisdiction. It's already been proclaimed. Now we're establishing it, and especially through the people's assemblies and these alternative institutions. So we're going to get into that in the second half. And prior to that, we're going to listen to, as promised, George Carlin and Irene Fabel.
But in the bullshit department, a businessman can't hold a candle to a clergyman. Because I got to tell you the truth, folks. When it comes to bullshit, big time, major league bullshit, you have to stand in awe. In awe of the all-time champion of false promises and exaggerated claims, religion. No contest. No contest. Religion easily has the greatest bullshit story ever told. Think about it. Religion has actually convinced people that there's an invisible man living in the sky who watches everything you do every minute of every day. And the invisible man has a special list of 10 things he does not want you to do. And if you do any of these 10 things, he has a special place full of fire and smoke and burning and torture and anguish where he will send you to live and suffer and burn and choke and scream and cry forever and ever till the end of time. But he loves you. He loves you and he needs money. He always needs money. He's all powerful, all perfect, all knowing, and all wise. Somehow, just can't handle money. Religion takes in billions of dollars, they pay no taxes, and they always need a little more. Now, you talk about a good bullshit story. Holy shit.
People and how communities are starting the process of moving on.
I'm Irene Fable, I'm 75. I went to a residential school in Muskogee in 1941 to 1949. And I had a very, very rough life. I was mistreated in every way. As a young girl, she was 7 years old. She was pregnant. And what they did, she had her baby. They took the baby, wrapped it up in nice pink outfit, took it downstairs. I was in the kitchen with the nun for cooking supper. They took the baby into the, where they make a fire and all that to heat up the school, furnace room. They threw that little baby in there and burnt it alive. All you could hear was, that was it. And you could smell the flesh cooking. It's a big mistake when people say we were treated good. No way. There's a lot of things that happen in those boarding schools.
And we're back. As they say, the comedy and the tragedy all hand in hand. And I mean, one is the other in a way when you think of it. The reason I played those, Ryan, and everybody listening was in a way, we have to laugh at this absurdity. But at the same time, alongside that, we have to recognize that there were literally and are children being sacrificed in that way. The Irene Fable's description of that burning of a baby was a ritual event. The burning alive of babies is part of these rituals. Now, I put that out there to show not only the seriousness of the crime, but how it's obligatory for everybody with a conscience who's still a human being to walk away from that system. And we are going to talk about that in the next half of the show, about how we do that. And comments first, Ryan, and then we'll kind of get into some of this.
Well, once people become aware of what's happening, and we addressed that on the show many times and in the last segment before our break, once we become aware, even one person becoming aware can consciously spread that throughout our unified consciousness as a species. And this kind of creates a type of ripple effect. And the more people that you influence by letting them know what's really going on and taking them out of their little reality bubble where they've numbed themselves to a point of not even knowing who they are, once we can kind of inform others, the movement starts to grow, as it obviously has since you exposed all of this over 20 years ago. And it, again, creates a ripple effect. So I have a question for you, because you wrote a little thing up for ITCCS this week called The Nature of Our Struggle. And I want to know about this she energy. I obviously know, I think, a lot about it, but for the listeners that don't know about it, what is the she energy that Sun Tzu talked about, and how can we apply this to the cause that we're fighting for?
Okay, and you know, it really relates to what we're talking about, because just as a little preamble to before answering your question, the what we find time and again, and this is true with anyone who takes on a serious enemy, you know, who's bigger than us, apparently, people will talk and plan to a certain point, and then they won't do anything. They'll wait for somebody else to lead. And this is what we're finding all over the world, and especially here in Canada. People love the idea of the Republic. They're all on board. Lots of people have signed up, and yet they're all waiting for somebody else to start. And this is related to this whole question of she and energy. And let me start with a quote by Sun Tzu from The Art of War. He says, now Sun Tzu was a general, Chinese general, writing 3,000 years ago. And he wrote this amazing book, The Art of War, which applies to so much in our world, and including the spiritual battles. He says, quote, whoever grasps and holds on to the essential energy or she of a situation will control the outcome of any battle and the fate of any opponent, no matter how powerful they are. And, you know, putting this in the context, I want to start with a concrete example of how this works. Here in Canada, there was at most, at a high point, perhaps 50 of us organized in this movement to expose genocide. We were based in three cities, in Vancouver, in Winnipeg, and Toronto. And several years before the so-called apology, we began to do public actions at these churches. And the one that culminated in an amazing, well, basically in us, a handful of us forcing this change out of the system, rewriting the narrative, if you like, of Canadian history. It started on March 17th, 2008. Two of our action groups occupied, without warning, the largest Catholic cathedrals in Vancouver and Toronto, and there were headlines about this all over the country. We had occupied the church during the Mass. We scared the shit out of the priests who were there. Most of the people in the pews were quite curious. And we demanded there that these genocidal churches be prosecuted and forced to return the remains of the children they had killed in the residential schools. We also announced we're going to start an international court action to charge Canada with genocide. That's on March 17th. Within a month, for the very first time, the Canadian government announces an inquiry into the missing residential school children, when nobody was talking about that before then. That inquiry led 3 months later to the official apology. So in a matter of a few months, suddenly, the whole system turns around and realizes they've got to start acknowledging this stuff. And they eventually admit, like you mentioned earlier, genocide had occurred and thousands of children died. So, in other words, we brought them around to our terms. Only a handful of us. Now, the question is, how can a handful of people do that? It wasn't because of numbers, because compare that to when thousands of people stand outside the government with placards and demand change from the government. Nothing changes. Or change that happens on the terms of the government. But those thousands of people's efforts are pissed away, because what they've done energetically is they've said to the system, okay, you're in charge. You have the power, not us. We're asking you for something. Now give it to us, please. The most militant protest in the world is leaving the she energy or power in the hands of the system. Whereas what we did is we created a whole new, like Sun Tzu says in The Art of War, the term he uses is you shape the ground of the enemy. We shaped the ground. We went into their territory and said, you're guilty, you have to do this. And they responded to us, regardless of how small we were. Now, that's a very important lesson because it's energetically, it's not about numbers, it's about where you are strategically, your consistency, and the evidence and truth in your hand, which we have had all along. So it's just an example to people that you can move mountains if you're in the right place with the right energy, regardless of who you're facing. So that's kind of the general point kind of leading into this discussion.
Now, I agree with you, Kevin, but I also want to add for maybe anybody that has this idea, are you also saying that protesting is not something we should do?
I think that protesting as an adjunct to something else is great. I mean, protest is the way we meet people. I know, having done this for 40 years, yeah, it educates people, you meet one another, but it's always a question of who is in charge and how are they directing your energy? Because most protesters are like steam in an engine controlled by somebody else. I saw this, I mean, a classic example, back in the 1980s, I was involved when I was a student at the University of British Columbia. The whole labor movement went out on strike. There was a general strike in British Columbia in November 1983 to stop this legislation by this right-wing government. We had at one point 100,000 people protesting outside the government offices. Two labor leaders made a deal with the government and they said, okay, it's over, and everybody went home. Now, if people were conscious and determined, how could they be turned off like that? It's because innate in any protest is this hierarchical notion that you've got a few leaders, they're going to tell you when to act and when not to act. But if a protest can be taken back by people and they can say, we're not going to go away, we're going to take over the government. You know, we're going to occupy these buildings and take it over. We have the right to do that under common law, natural law, when you're facing a criminal unlawful body, like the present regimes are. So, you know, it's a question of what you do, not the fact of protest in and of itself.
No, I think that you're exactly right. And I read that the info that you put up on ITCCS about the action groups that went in and occupied the cathedrals in Vancouver and Toronto. And you're right, it's just a small group of people that can make such a great difference. I mean, so many people are waiting for that father figure hand to come down and issue, you know, the apology or issue the, you know, the like the TRC to issue the information about the crimes that were actually committed. And then they believe that regardless of how much evidence other people like yourself have put out for years prior to where you were called nuts. And they told the system basically tried to, you know, come down on you as hard as possible until they just basically admit it, but then also try to whitewash it at the same time. So to me, I mean, it's like it reminds me of, you know, if you think of fire, the opposite of fire most people think is water. So if you have a candle that's lit and you go up and blow it out, and a couple minutes right. later someone dumps a gallon of water on it, the average person says, oh, the candle must have been put out because you dumped a gallon of water on it. Well, it's like, no, the candle was put out because you blew it out. And that's the kind of, yeah, that's the kind of thing that comes to my mind. It's like, well, you know, the system didn't, you know, didn't dump a gallon of water out in the sense that they announced this criminal activity. It's the fact that people like you came and blew the candle out, or lit the candle, if you will, to illuminate what was happening long time before they ever dumped that water on the candle. Well,
and they also knew, Ryan, that they're sitting on present crime, and they didn't want churches occupied because that church we occupied, Holy Rosary Cathedral in downtown Vancouver, Raymond Rusin, the bishop who suddenly resigned very soon after we occupied his cathedral, he was a member of the Vancouver Club and tied into this 12 Mile group where the children are taken and raped and killed and dumped outside the 12 Mile territorial limit. He was scared shitless that his own role in that present day child trafficking was going to be exposed. So that's one of the reasons they buckled. Let me throw out a few more quotes from Sun Tzu. And this is up online at itccs.org. So I urge all the listeners to go read this and ponder it and apply it to your own situation. Three little points in guerrilla warfare. This is how we won and how we can win again. Sun Tzu says, when I am few and my enemy is many, I can use the few to strike the many, because those whom I battle are restricted, being larger and more unwieldy. And so their strength becomes their weakness. Second, do not respond to the ground your enemy has prepared for you, but shape their ground. We've talked about that already. And the third one is always hide the time of battle from an enemy and make what he loves and defends your first objective. Then he must respond on your terms. Now, you know, going into the cathedral and threatening to take the collection plates out, that's what they love. And so that's one of their Achilles heels. And this all leads to what we are going to do today. And I want to use the last 15 minutes here to talk about the people's assemblies, because we can't really fight the energy of a whole system individually. We know that how that doesn't work. People are isolated. They end up like Dean Clifford in jail. We've got to attack this as a group. We've got to create our own collective she, if you like. And here's a quote leading into this from John Adams, who said in the American Revolution, "The revolution may have been effected in the hearts and minds of the people first, but it finally took shape in our constitutional conventions, where the people learned how to hold and wield power for themselves." And this is what the idea of the People's Assembly is. We convene these groups in our community. We take action in the name of a whole group. We do it lawfully. We issue these arrest warrants. We seize these properties in the land. We can do anything from that lawful position. And in fact, some of the folks in America are talking about convening people's assemblies to put their town councils on trial for helping smart meters or chemtrailing happen. So they're going to convict the existing governments for colluding in crimes against the earth and themselves. This is one of the ways that people's assemblies can gather and take action and create our own collective energy.
Well, Kevin, let me ask you this. As more and more people become aware of what's happening, and more, whether it's smart meters or the information that we discuss every week here on Radio Free Kanata, is it necessarily a good or bad thing that our group continues to grow to a large number of people? Because how do we make sure that our strengths, being small, doesn't expand to that of our enemy and becomes very large, so that also becomes our weakness, if that makes any sense?
Very, very important point, and I'm glad you raised it. Because, and let's talk about this, and if others listening have their own ideas, please write in response to any of this to Republic of Kanata, K-A-N-A-T-A, republicofkanata@gmail.com. You're right. We, you know, on three previous occasions, I've been part of efforts to build organizations around this, and on three occasions, they've all been destroyed from within. And it happened even recently within the Republic. There was a group in one part of the country that was infiltrated, and some of our who appeared to be our best supporters turned on us and tried to wreck it, just the way they did with the tribunal and the common law courts. And you know, it's a regular tactic of planting people within the group and then having them try to wreck it from within. You can be a whole network of people and not fall prey to that simply by keeping your organization decentralized. You can have a whole mass movement, but it doesn't have to express itself in a mass way. Because when you think about it, most of the work we do is informal anyway. It's in our communities. It's meeting with people. We don't need to have a big show. We're an underground movement until the last moment we come up and just seize the whole bit. But that happens in a grassroots way. And so, for example, what we recommend is when people are reading this material and want to form a group based on the Republic and its principles, you get 3 to 5 people together and you operate as a cell group, and you notify your local convener. Now, we have these conveners both on a provincial and a citywide basis. We have one convener for all of Ontario, but she pretty much just coordinates, you know, the different groups. There's nobody with an access to all of the members or anything, so it can't be destroyed from a central place. So the cell groups know each other, but most importantly, they know their own situation. And the best antidote to destruction is getting more and more people involved. So when we gather these people's assemblies, we say, look, it's up to the community to take action for themselves. We are not going to do it for you. We're not your leaders, because leaders can be co-opted and destroyed, and then you're all scared and you run away. We are activating the consciousness in every single man and woman and child, and that's the way, the best defense. But you're right, in this period we're in right now, it's very important to stay organized in a decentralized, localized way. And most importantly is you get the ideas out. I remember Thomas Paine, who wrote Common Sense during the American Revolution, he said, an army of principles can penetrate where an army of soldiers cannot, because ideas are infectious and they spread everywhere and it cannot be controlled. We've got to get our ideas out there in a massive way, and then people will be thinking and it'll germinate and they'll take action for themselves. It won't have to rely on us and the few of us organizing this right now.
That's right. That's so important to understand, is that so many people still even wanting to get involved with this, Kevin, they want to make a difference in the world, they are still so focused on having to have some type of centralized authority or having to have some type of figure to look to as a leader. And I mean, that in and of itself is part of the educational process to break that paradigm, to understand that that's not how this is going to operate. If we try to operate that way, we become just like our enemy. And like Sun Tzu says, our destruction would come about from our absorption back into that greater whole, operating just as our enemy operates.
And don't we have so many examples from history of that? You know, people often use it as an excuse not to get involved in stuff. Well, revolutions always end up having, the old boss out, and then there's a new boss, and he runs things. And in a way, you can't point to any revolution that hasn't created that. There's a new elite that comes in eventually. But the thing to understand is that because it seems that way, it doesn't mean that people don't have the potential to change that all the time. Don't forget, the founding fathers of the American Constitution ingrained in the Constitution the right of the people to revolt and throw out the government if it's undermining their liberties.
That's right. They have the right and duty. That's what it says. They have the right and duty to overthrow such governments and provide for the common good.
And they didn't say, you know, according to the existing rules and statutes and regulations. They said it as a principle. We know inherently what liberty is. We know what the world should be. We know the present system is subverting that at every level more and more, and therefore we have a God-given right to reclaim. Now, when we say reclaim, we're taking back what's been taken from us and what we've given up, unfortunately, in a state of being asleep. But by taking that back, we are establishing the real lawful authority. And so we say that to the police. We are saying, get on board. Take an oath of allegiance to our common law courts now and republic, because in America, your sheriffs are already on board. They can already do that because they're elected by the community. We need to establish that in Canada. But it's the same principle that we create a counterforce and draw people out. We don't attack the system that absorbs our energy. We bring people out with our own energy.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I don't know if anybody's out there has ever seen that movie, The Fifth Element, but when they're in space, there's that huge ball of like negativity and just pure evil. And the more they attack it, the stronger it grows, the stronger it becomes. And I think that's a really good analogy for what we're dealing with. If we look at the system as this big ball of evil, the more destructive acts we attempt to, you know, gear towards it, the stronger it actually becomes and the weaker we become. We have to take the energy from it and bleed it off energetically by getting people to become aware and starting not a violent physical revolution and installing some new leader, but a type of spiritual revolution, a conscious revolution, Kevin.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting too, because when you, I did a lot of, when I was a weekly pastor, I did a lot of, whenever I had a passage from the Bible, I would go back to the Greek and the Hebrew and translate it out for people. And it was always a very different message than what you get in the other translations. Oh, yeah. And when you look at Jesus' words for what he's saying people to do, it's exactly along the same lines. He's saying, when he says, do not resist evil, it's being translated that way in English, but what he's saying by the word resist is, do not be like evil. It doesn't mean don't oppose it. It means don't enter into its energy. And when he talks about repentance, turning away from that, the word in Hebrew, shubah, means you turn 180 degrees around and you walk in a different direction, away from the evil. You ignore it and you let it die. And that's exactly what we're doing. We're walking out of the system. And people have got to start rethinking in those terms. You get out, you don't reinforce.
Well, that's the old notion of turn the other cheek, right?
Right. You take the energy of the enemy out of themselves. Gandhi was into that all the time. As they were being beaten up by British batons, they were, in fact, winning. They were taking the energy out of those British soldiers and achieving a moral ascendancy over the British Empire. And look what happened.
Yeah, this is actually a whole other idea and thought. Just give me like 1 minute. I know we've probably got some other things to say. But
go ahead.
If you look at something like I don't know if people believe in the idea of demons or angels or aliens, but if you look at like a type of demon possession where maybe the church comes in for an exorcism, a type of possession, or if maybe you're living in a place that you find haunted or something, a lot of times people that do paranormal investigations, people that maybe are involved with the church, maybe you're not, will tell you that when you experience something like that, or you feel like someone's watching you, the best thing that you can do in those cases is to laugh it off, turn on a funny TV show, listen to something that's funny on the radio, laugh about it, smile, joke, don't give it any credence, and it eventually goes away. It basically dies off because you have not given it that fear and that energy that it needs to survive.
Yeah, you know what I find, Ryan, in situations of real tension, like when I've been on protests where people are getting their heads busted, or when we're at the churches and the cops showed up, 20 of them, and tried to intimidate us off, I joked with them, I got them to laugh, and we got people to start playing music. And the music and the laughter just went, whoosh, and it got rid of all of that energy. So I would urge that to people. When you're holding meetings, start with music. Start with singing. Tell jokes. Look at the lighter side of what we're
doing. Dance.
Right, dance. I mean, these are the other parts of who we are that is our real strength as men and women. And we have to bring all of this stuff in.
Absolutely, Kevin. In the last couple of minutes we have here, do you want to have have anything else that you want to talk about, or do you want to give people a heads up for next week?
Well, this is an ongoing discussion. We don't want to cram everything into 1 week, because this is an ongoing teaching and dialogue with all of us. And I just, again, urge people, go to itccs.org and look over this latest posting called The Purpose and Nature of Our Struggle. And also write to us, republicofcanada@gmail.com. A little heads up, starting in September and October, groups really all over North America now, 9 right here in Canada, are going to be convening people's assemblies. And we're going to be talking more of the nuts and bolts of that, involving some of the people doing it. And so that's something to stay tuned for. Go to canadarepublic.ca, read the documents, and contact us if you want to be part of setting up one of these groups. Final thing is, of course, that we urge people to contribute. This show costs almost $300 a month. Please send in your donations. We are doing this together. There's not a big daddy somewhere paying for it all. This is a community effort like everything. So write to us, republicofcanada@gmail.com, if you want to donate. Most importantly, not the money, but your energy, your she, your mind, shifting off the system back onto what matters. That's all of us reclaiming our world. Any final thoughts, Ryan, about your websites or anything?
Yeah, if anybody would actually like to contact me directly, my email is rdgable, rdgable @yahoo.com. And tonight I actually have the fourth week of Sustainable Development and Agenda 21 Population Control, which will be airing at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific on the LNM Radio Network and some others. It is available, the stream and the link, on my website, thesecretteachings.info. In that program, that's 4 hours long, we'll also be talking about spiritual evolution, actually, and the concepts of alchemy applied to the human experience. So all really good information. And again, that is thesecretteachings.info. Kevin, thanks again. This was a great show today.
It sure was. Thank you, brother. And again, to everyone, stay tuned. Same time next week, 6 p.m. Eastern, Radio Free Canada. Until then, stay clear and stay strong.